Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Kate Ford, a educator and a candidate for the Santa Barbara School Board elections that are coming up in 2 months. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so great to be here, Neil.
So, you know, education is probably the most important thing that we could be talking about, whether it be about the economy, whether it be about social injustice, and the fact that you are a teacher first, I guess, is one of the things that I think makes it important that you get consideration to be on the board of the school district.
Thanks.
So you spent how many years teaching?
13, over 13. I taught high school and junior high English, social studies, and drama, and I directed a number of plays. And it's interesting that you would say that and gratifying to hear, just because I credit actually so much of my success and so much of the way that I look at the world and look at education with my experience as being a teacher, even though I've been a principal and a superintendent.
Well, you know,
there
was this article in the New York Times 2 weeks ago, which I thought was really so intriguing. It's the title of the article was "What Makes a Good Teacher," and the author begins by using Albert Einstein as an example of a lousy teacher. Apparently, when he started teaching, right after he wrote his theory of relativity, he couldn't get a job, so he decided to teach. He couldn't keep a class because he couldn't communicate the ideas. And what the author of this article says, that a teacher not only needs to know the knowledge, but needs to be able to communicate it in a way that the average person can understand it. And when I started teaching, I used to be on Wall Street, but when I started teaching, when I came to Santa Barbara and went to City College and started to teach investments and finance, I remember one of my first classes, I just mentioned casually bull market. And a kid's hand went up, and he said, "What's a bull market?" And I was going to make a wisecrack, and then I realized, wait a minute, he's here to learn.
Right.
So one of the things a teacher has to do, and that's why I thought after all my years in business, teaching was the most difficult thing, really has to relearn the subject in a way that can be communicated.
That's right. Like, you have to actually have a great basis in the knowledge of the subject, absolutely, without a doubt. But you have to be able to meet the kids as they walk through the door to create that connection with them, with their lives, and also just build relationships. It's really the first step. And I was just talking with a friend yesterday, and he said, you know what? What you always are able to do is just break things down and make them understandable. And I thought, well, that's because I was a teacher for so long.
So being a good teacher, you know, in every industry, people get Peter Principal up to something they can't do. Now, you were a principal, still are, I guess, at Peabody?
No, I was a principal at Peabody, and for the last 5 years, I've been a superintendent in Los Angeles. But I was a principal for 20 years, and I'm one of those weird people who absolutely loved being a principal. Sometimes when I talk to people, they cringe when they say when they hear I was a principal, or say that they feel sorry for me. But I actually loved every minute of it. I loved having so much interaction with teachers, because first and foremost, I think of myself as a teacher. So you have this great opportunity to be friends and colleagues and mentors to teachers as well as students when you're a principal.
And can you teach teachers to be better teachers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, by breaking down the teaching act and by being really good at giving feedback. How about this one time when you did this? Perhaps if you did it this way, not, you know, broad strokes of you that was a crummy lesson, but let's break down this lesson and let's try a few different things. Again, you can't do it without building relationship with teachers either. So I think that's why I loved being a principal so much, is that I was able to, I could see that by creating that partnership with teachers, there was a difference in how students learned.
And your job as a superintendent, that was entailed what?
In Los Angeles, you know what it really gave me the opportunity to do for the last 5 years is really do what I think I do best now at this advanced stage in my life, which is mentor. And mentor young leaders so that lots of the teachers and the principals in Los Angeles are very young. And they're eager. They're extremely passionate. They're knowledgeable. But, you know, it really helps to have someone who can pull it all together. And I think my experience really helped that. So, you know, ultimately the superintendent is responsible for the fiscal soundness of each of the schools, for the management of the schools, to make sure all the teachers are competent and have all the right credentials and to make sure the kids are learning. So it was, you know, I think over the years what I've just done is kind of expanded my influence at the same time expanded my responsibilities. But it's all really the same thing as trying to help kids and teachers be successful.
So listening to you for the last few minutes, if I didn't know what you were doing, I'd say, you know, you should run for the school board.
Why, thank you. This is what I think, too.
You mean it's not a unique idea? This is perfect for you.
I agree. Thank you, Neil. And I'm really excited about it, too. Yeah. So when we were talking just briefly, and this is the first office I've ever run for, but I really want to be a great candidate so that I can be on the board and be a great board member.
So you were at Peabody, and Peabody is a charter school?
It is.
So what do you think of charter schools?
I'm a supporter of charter schools. Let's put it this way. I'm a supporter of charter schools that do things well. And one of the things that has always drawn me to charter schools is the ability or the kind of like the charge, the promise to catalyze change. And charter schools in general, if they're done well, have a little bit more flexibility. They're a little bit more open to innovation and creativity. And can do things a little bit different without quite the bureaucracy that we often see in school districts.
Is there an inequity there, though, because to the extent that charter schools actually can do better, what happens to the kids not in charter schools?
Well, I think that's the point, is that actually charter schools can, if they actually do this or that better, they can actually say, hey, would you like this? They're all public schools. Mm-hmm. Charter schools are public schools. So when I was the principal of Peabody and at Aspire, we invite people to come in. We wanted to have great relationships with district personnel and with other principals and other teachers, because this really isn't about these are my kids and those are yours. This is about the state of California. They're all our kids. So I think it's just important to do a good job with students and get the word out. Sometimes charters can do that in a smoother, as I said, more flexible way. But the interesting thing about Peabody, excuse me, is that it was a conversion charter, which means it was a regular district school and it has boundaries. And so that makes it kind of unique. So the students all come from the San Roque area and then all the way down De La Vina. The teachers also belong to the teachers union, and so do the school employees belong to their own union also. So it's this great hybrid. And it's a fabulous school.
So you worked also with Bill and Melinda Gates?
I did.
And so when the three of you were together, what was the average net worth of the three of you?
Okay, you're joking now, right? You don't have much opportunity to meet with Bill and Melinda, although their influence is deep and intense. And as I've mentioned a few times with friends, working for the foundation was an amazing experience. I only stayed there less than 3 years, though, because I felt like my lessons were learned. What I learned was that you should not make any decisions without deep data research and being very results-oriented. So no matter what you say about Bill Gates and Melinda, they don't make any decisions because things are bright, shiny objects. They make decisions based on a lot of thought, research, and sending out people to say, where are good things going and how can we help them more? So I think that when I came to Aspire, and Aspire was one of my grantees at the foundation, so it just gave me this heightened sense of awareness of not doing what we often do, which is chase those shiny objects and just build on what is going well and what you have results for.
So Aspire is?
A charter management organization.
That has to do with the Gates? Is that one of their?
It was one of the. It's just one of their hundreds and hundreds of grantees. They received a grant, as did many other places throughout the country, to try to figure out what's the best way to help teachers improve and how to compensate them or incentivize them for the improvement. And although I think in some ways that that was a grand experiment which didn't produce exactly what they were hoping it might produce, it really helped us, and I think it helped Aspire and all the other grantees really see what goes into the Teaching Act and then what you really need to make sure you have available for your teachers.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kate Ford, an educator and a candidate for the Santa Barbara School District. AHA uses, as I just said, innovative social-emotional learning. How important, in your view, is social-emotional learning?
Wow. I've learned so much in the last maybe 2 years about social-emotional learning, and I think the world has too. You know, we used to think that the brain kind of compartmentalized learning, but it turns out that the prefrontal cortex is not only the place that gathers and sort of translates knowledge, but it also addresses emotions. So while we might have thought that there were different, these were two different parts of the brain, they're all really connected. So especially with the world the way it is today, social-emotional learning is absolutely essential. And where I just came from, we just implemented it across the board in every grade level, K through 12, just because students need to learn how to interact. They need to understand their own feelings. They need to understand the feelings and empathize with others. And then they need to translate that into the ways that you build relationships and also keep yourself healthy. So I think it's really important to summarize.
Yeah, and you know, I my own experience in life is that there are a lot of much smarter academic people than me in my class, but that didn't foretell success in life.
That's right.
Because without the ability to read people, communicate with people, it doesn't matter how much academic success you have, you're not going to succeed with the world as it is, particularly today. So the school district, and it's not just AHA, it's so many other organizations have been working with the school district, which I think is a really good thing. We had a guest on, we had two guests on the last month about suicide prevention in the schools. They you know, there's a collaboration with, what was the group? There's a collaboration with, I can't.
SOS. Save Our Schools.
Save Our Schools, where they have counselors in every school now,
mm-hmm.
to help kids with mental health issues, with trying to get rid of the stigma of mental health, with dealing with potential significant depression beyond the normal depression that these teens have. So I assume that that's something that you would continue
support. Oh my goodness, absolutely. You know, when the law actually required that every district adopt a youth suicide prevention policy last year. Mm. And it had to go, well, and before that, it had to go into effect 2017-18, which I was really gratified to see, because I think sometimes we forget that just how important this is, and suicide rates are on the rise, and students experiencing depression, trauma, difficulties, sadness, feelings of ostracizing. These are so essential. And if you are experiencing those things, how can you learn? How can you learn? So, for example, at Aspire Schools, every school has a mental health counselor. Just because even from kindergarten, it's easy to see what students are just sort of unhappy, who are not mixing in. And between the counselor and the teachers building relationships with them, we should be able to eradicate suicide, teen suicide. It is preventable.
And how about, you know, I'll use the word broadly, justice. I mean, this is a city, a community that most people think is very rich. But on the other hand, it has one of the highest levels of students on lunch programs.
That's right.
So you have, you know, this a lot of first-generation kids here. And so you have a system where you're putting kids in with different economic, socioeconomic backgrounds together. And that creates some issues that, you know, go beyond the normal school. It's not a homogeneous constituency of students.
At all.
And that, I guess, presents other problems, too, when it comes to teaching in a classroom. You know, I guess one of the challenges I knew when I was teaching at City College was because it was open admissions, the unevenness of the preparation for each kid.
Yes.
And I think that's a real challenge for teachers. You know, when you have a class that, you know, has a wide distribution of capability and preparedness, how do you deal with that?
Well, this is, this is the stuff of some of the biggest brains in the world, and we certainly don't have it wired. But the one thing you do have to understand is you actually have to have enough data to know what students know and what they don't. And a lot of times we've kind of just thrown a lot of things at the wall and hope they stick. And so really it all gets back to me, to professional development and to creating the kinds of opportunities for teachers so they can really not only design really engaging and essential lessons that actually get at many different aspects of learning, but also that they know how to address students who are less prepared and also the students who are accelerated. So, like you said earlier, teaching is one of the most difficult jobs in the world. I was reflecting on it this morning and thinking, you know, I know there are other jobs that are more physically demanding or financially difficult, but there's nothing more difficult than teaching because really, we walk through that door with this promise that you will try to make this happen for every one of the students in the classroom.
And what makes it even more difficult is a thing called parents.
So well, you're not necessarily.
Well, it'd be nice. You know, it's like when I see my grandchildren, I'd like for my kids to leave. I can handle it better than they can. Because one of the things, the interference that parents sometimes are putting up could be a challenge, too.
It's true.
So it's like a triangle. You've got, you know, you've got the teacher, you've got the parents, and you've got the kids. So I guess in a multicultural, economically diverse community like ours, there probably are issues that, you know, whether it's, you know, sex ed or whether it's, you know, LGBT rights or, you know, parents can sometimes argue about or spending time on social-emotional intelligence as opposed to mathematics. I mean, I would imagine there could be pretty feisty school board meetings.
There might be. But, you know, I would welcome that because I was at a school board meeting last night and there were less than 5 people there. Mm. And they were talking about really important issues. So actually, I think it's really important to consider parents as your partners. And does that make it sometimes challenging? Of course. Because a lot of times parents come through the door and they say, I want it just like I had it. Well, this is a whole different world and your child isn't you. And so mostly this is about, for me, parent education and engaging the parents. And that means inviting them at times which are good for them to come in, not only learning about their child's performance, but about what's going on at the school and ways that they can help, or at least ways that they can feel like they are part of this. And I've always said that parents are our partners for the student's success. And to the extent that they can be involved, they need to be. This is important stuff.
So let me, you know, say what you were too nice to say, which is that there are 12 people running for 2 seats, and there are only 5 people in the audience, which means that at least 7 of the candidates weren't there yet last night. Right?
No, Mark Alvarado was there.
Well, I said at least 7.
So there are 8 candidates altogether.
Oh, 8, okay.
So 6 weren't there. That's okay. Right.
Yeah, see that? So, therefore, we should only vote for people that attend the meetings where there's no...
I like the way you think.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. another reason is that you, and I don't know, can I still call you by your first name? You were Educator of the Year twice.
I was.
And where was that?
Well, one was a million years ago when I was first a young teacher in the 70s, late 70s, in Merced. I taught high school. And I don't, you know, to this day, first of all, it was a long time ago, but I was just really so delighted to get the honor. And they took that some of the teachers who won this honor in this big school district and other notable community leaders, and they took us on a trip to Omaha, Nebraska. You might say, why? Well, there's a, in Merced, right outside Merced, there's a big Air Force base. And so the Air Force base invited us to Strategic Air Command in Omaha, Nebraska. It was a tremendous experience and just made me feel great because I was just like every other teacher. I love recognition, and I liked having this opportunity to be with people who weren't teachers, too. The second time was when I was leaving Moreland School District. I'd been a principal there for 6 years. And, you know, knock on all the wood I can find, the teachers and I and the parents really took this low-performing middle school to being one of the highest-performing in the area. And so they gave me an Educator of the Year award. They'd only given it one other time. So I'm really proud of those two awards. But they're not the heart and soul of what I do. The heart and soul of what I do is when people tell me that I made a difference in their success. And that's teachers and principals.
Can schools succeed with really dedicated, terrific teachers and administrators and no money, or vice versa? I mean, is money not the most critical? People think it's money that sometimes that makes a difference. But can you succeed without the right amount of money?
It makes it very difficult in the world today. First of all, technology. You've got to make sure that kids have the highest levels of access to technology. That's not cheap. Teachers need to be paid well. That's not cheap. So those are a couple examples. I also think that schools need to be sanctuaries. They need to be beautiful places so that kids feel safe and also feel appreciated. So I think that money matters, definitely. And you can see in some of the states across the country where there's hardly any funding for education, that those kids are doing pretty poorly across the board. And now that we have this new funding formula, which I will always say is Governor Brown's legacy, we are slowly in California being able to build back and put back in things that really matter. Like, I'm a big proponent of the 20-to-1 in the lower grades. It was called class size reduction in the 90s and 2000s, but it went away with the recession, and we need to bring it back because in order to really give those kids a great foundation, the classes need to be a little smaller. These all cost money.
Yeah, you know, it's really been quite a trip. In the 1960s, you know, California was the premier school for the whole world. And in some of the rankings, you know, California comes in at number 40. It's just really sad what's happened over the last 60 years. And, you know, that has to do with Proposition 13. It has to do with, you know, people getting older and not having kids. One of the good things about Santa Barbara is that even with so many people not having children at school age anymore, they vote for bond issues that help.
They do.
And so there is support here and understanding how important education is to our community. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kate Ford, a candidate for the Santa Barbara School Board. And speaking of this, of the school board, what does a school board member do? What do they do?
Well, first of all, here's what they don't do. They don't write and make curriculum, and they don't hire and recruit and retain staff. What they do is, first of all, they're responsible for being extremely knowledgeable about the schools and being communicators. So they have to have an open door policy for themselves, and also they have to get out into the schools and know what's going on and how people are feeling. So communication. The second thing that they really need to do is they need to be very cognizant of the rules and the laws of the country and the state so that they can make policy. They make policy that the district leadership, led, of course, by the superintendent, follow and put into place. And they need to follow up on that and make sure that the things that are good for kids and the things which are legally required are in place. I'd say the third thing that they need to do, very important, is to keep the district fiscally solvent. And they need to be completely responsible for the fiscal health of the district. And fourth, their biggest job is hiring, recruiting, retaining, supporting, evaluating the superintendent.
This is radio, so our listeners don't know this, but the entire time Kate has been talking without notes.
Oh.
this is not a list of things she's reading off. She obviously has spent a lifetime preparing for this role and actually knows this subject. What is the risk? You know, I've been on a bunch of non-for-profit boards, and not exactly the same thing, but many times board members sort of act out in a board meeting and in their role, and they either are trying to, you know, put forth some position that they have that may not have any, you know, basis in reality, or they may be mad at the person sitting next to them. Is there any issue with – is our school board totally functional is what I'm asking?
Well, I think our school board is functional for sure. I watched them ask really good questions last night, and I think that they expressed worries and concerns that I have. And so I would say that I think they're thinking. I think they're doing their homework. I would say that what I think I would bring to the board is I would ask harder questions and I would demand better answers from the district leadership, because there were a few times where I felt like they wanted to be supportive of the superintendent and his staff, which is lovely. But on the other hand, probably if you had a group of 100 people there, they would say, you need to just dive a little deeper into this, which is why I think I would be really helpful, is that, you know, I think I've made a career of having pretty high expectations and demanding lots of things of people at the same time providing support. So, for example, last night Kate Parker asked, well, we all know music, we believe very strongly that music education is important, and I think it's essential. And she said, but really, we've never been presented with any data about what the difference is it makes. So wouldn't it be nice if you actually gave us some data on music education and whether it makes a difference in student achievement? And I thought Kate Ford on the board would have said, I'll research that, mm-hmm. and I'll get back to you with the data, and I will find the data that shows that this makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. It has in my life and in the lives of so many students I've worked with. So I hope that just gives you an idea of how I feel like the board can be more pointed, it can be more demanding, I think, therefore more involved.
And is the board subject to the Brown Act?
Of course.
So, which is one of the real challenges. And it'd be nice to be able to have meetings in private, because one of the things about, you know, being, you said, in a way, very nice and not delving deep, it's every time you say something, it's a public statement. So if you have a little bit of an issue with a principal or whatever, and it comes up in a public hearing, you may tend to pull back a little bit. And so one of the challenges of the Brown Act is how do you get the best ideas on the table when everything is going to be transcribed?
Well, I actually think that the Brown Act is a great thing, because basically what it makes sure is that this is a meeting in public. It's not a public meeting, so it's not a free-for-all. We all get to say everything that's on our minds, and everybody gets to speak. It actually just gives format and structure to meetings, which I think in general is good. I just think that when you have a knowledgeable board, they can self-regulate on that. And also, if they have really good relationships with the superintendent, I know there are lots of districts where when an agenda item is presented, or the agenda is presented, then the board members actually meet individually with the superintendent and kind of go over things and say, well, here's some things I'm thinking about, here's some things I hope you'll mention, so that when it's actually the public facing meeting, that lots of things have been either addressed or discussed at least, and then I just think, actually, I'm think that it's fine that the Brown Act makes you behave.
Well, you know, what, you mentioned music before, and I think the other thing that really is important is acting.
Me too.
And well, not just people think acting is about just the performance part of it. But you know, when I was finishing therapy in New York, my therapist said, "Your next step for you is you should take an acting class." And I said, "Well, I don't want to be an actor." And she said, "But acting is, it gets you in touch with who you are." And so one of the things that, and probably I don't know anything about music, so music may be the same thing. It gives you an opportunity to really dig deep into yourself and to do things that maybe will help you in terms of your life way beyond what the actual performance is or what the music is.
And gets you in touch with language.
Yeah.
And language is what connects all of us, whether it's English or Spanish or any other language. And there is lots of research that shows that music and the arts actually connect so well with students who are learning a second language. So our English learners, they would benefit from music and art also.
Look, if this was a musical, we would now start a dance and singing.
Yes, we would. How did you know? Musicals are my thing.
I know. I'd like to sing this, but I can't sing. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, communicate, and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kate Ford, a candidate for the Santa Barbara School Board. And I just read a sentence that included the word bullying. And what I was really surprised at is that over the years we've had guests on, and whenever I have kids who are attending school in Santa Barbara, I'm shocked at how much bullying still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think that in a community like this, it would be almost non-existent, but it's not. And what can we do about it?
Well, it's yes, there are no pat answers about bullying, and yes, it still goes on, but it doesn't go on to a very large extent in school communities where respect, kindness, tolerance, and understanding are the foundations of what goes on in the school. And where everyone understands that bullying's not accepted. And that means every adult, too. Because I think, I don't know if you would agree, but even in our country today, there's certain forms of bullying that are encouraged or allowed. And that's just not okay for me. And so I think that this creation of a place where kids feel safe involves building those relationships. So where we would tell students that we didn't want them to tattle. We wanted them to tell. We wanted them not to get people in trouble, but to help people. So it means that it's a whole school approach. And then when it gets to the point where there's a person or a situation that's out of control, you have to be absolutely adamant and serious in the consequences, up to and including suspension and expulsion.
Okay, so this leads to the next question, which is about restorative justice as opposed to just punishment. What's your view on that whole movement to really deal with the perpetrator as much as you deal in terms of trying to help that perpetrator understand the damage that they're doing?
I have learned so much over, I'd say, like the last 7 years. When I first heard about restorative justice, I was skeptical. But the bottom line is that any kind of punishment actually does nothing to change behavior. It might possibly motivate a student to stop doing something, but it doesn't actually change their mind and their heart. And that's actually what you want to do. The other thing that we know for sure now, for sure, is that suspension feeds the school-to-prison pipeline. And that has to stop, too. So I'm a huge believer in restorative justice, and I feel like the state is moving very strongly in that direction, and Santa Barbara Unified School District is also, that this is about actually having kids understand, talk about, discuss, work through their disagreements and their controversy so that they actually appreciate the other point of view and they pay back and pay forward rather than are punished.
So this is the first day of, you've just been elected, you just got sworn in. What are you going to do the first day? What is the thing that interests you and think needs your attention from day one?
Get out to all the schools and talk with teachers, hear what's on their minds, and convey that back to the board, especially making sure that teachers have what they need and making sure that I see what I believe are really warm and inviting environments. And I think that that's pretty easy to do.
Is that okay to do? I mean, because, you know,
okay.
That is a board member can actually, I mean, there's a sort of view in, by some people have about any organization has a structure. So you've got the soldiers, which are the teachers, and then you've got the general, which is the school superintendent, and then you have, you know, the public or the representatives of the public overseeing the general. But should the I don't have a blackboard here, but should the
you could draw it all out,
right? But should the, you know, should the people who are in charge, the general's boss, actually go down into the troops? Is that okay?
Of course, George Washington did. Yeah. I do think.
Yeah,
think,
but look what happened to him. He's dead.
No.
So
they wanted to make him king.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Honestly, seriously, I think it's really essential. It's not subverting the power or authority of anybody to find out what's on the minds of the people who are actually doing the work. And I think that's, I mean, I think you can't understate that, or you can't overstate it too much, that these are the people doing the work. Listen to them carefully, because they are the heart and soul of what's going on in schools. So does that mean you have these surprise visits? No, I wouldn't do surprise visits. And I'd work it through with all the principals. And the superintendent would have to know that's who I am. But like, for example, you could just schedule a time where, you know, from 9 to noon at Dos Pueblos High School, Kate Ford's going to be sitting in the teacher's lounge. Go see her, talk to her, meet her. Tell her what's on your mind.
Is this controversial? In other words, if this actually happens, is there any other side to the story? I mean, people are going to say, "No, don't get into the
weeds." No, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, not from my point of view. Okay. I mean, I could see how someone might think, like, is that overstepping boundaries? But to me, it's not.
Okay.
Because when you go back and you think about what I said were the responsibilities of the board, they have to know what's going on.
Okay, so now you're there. What do you think, though, without having done this, you know, micro view of the world that you're going to be supervising, what do you think are the issues that need to be addressed? What are the, you know, the top issues that we need some work on?
Well, it's a common term, but it's very real, and that's the achievement gap. Not all students have access, number one, to the highest levels of curriculum, and they are not having opportunity to be successful. So if you look at the data, even the most recent data, we have a lot of students who are students of color and students who speak English as their second language. And they're doing so much worse on the assessments that we think are important than their white cohorts. And so that has to be addressed. There has to be some sense for what are we actually doing to make sure that these kids can be successful. That's our number one job, is to make sure everyone
okay.
is.
So we've had the current superintendent on and the last superintendent on the show over the years. Both of them said this was their number one priority. So why do we still have it? Is it such a difficult task?
I think it is.
And it has to do a lot with, you know, socioeconomic differences. I like to tell the story that, you know, if I didn't have all the help I had as a kid from my parents in terms of tutors and therapists and my mother sitting there doing homework with me, I would have never got through elementary school. And if you look at kids who now today who have, you know, parents that don't have a fourth grade education and maybe only one parent and, you know, the parents are afraid they're going to get deported, they're not helping. As Hillary Clinton said, I have to bring up Hillary Clinton, but it takes a village.
It does
and
take
education.
A village.
So, you know, it may be just an intractable problem to solve.
Yes, but it may have aspects of it that are intractable, but you can't give up on it because these are kids and they deserve this. So it means that you have to possibly And there are lots of services and opportunities in Santa Barbara. That's why I'm very hopeful and optimistic to provide kind of wraparound services. So if you can't provide a service that a student needs at the school, then you find out where you can. And whether that means food, whether it means comforting, whether it means housing, whether it means medical care, dental care, these are all things that go into the making of a kid and a kid's success. So
it's amazing that people who are on certain political views don't seem to understand that if you don't if the child doesn't have protein, they're not going to learn. So they spend money on education, but they don't want to do school food. You know, it's just
it's just the bottom line. If you go to school hungry and your teeth hurt because you have cavities, your chances of learning are very small. So I think, again, you know, back to a number of things you brought up before, this isn't cheap and this isn't easy, but it's really worthwhile. These are the kids who will be in charge of the world after us, and we have to equip them with the things they need.
Well said. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and believe it or not, we'll be back with our final segment. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I am Neil Kreisel, and I'm here with Kate Ford, a candidate for the Santa Barbara School Board, a Teacher of the Year twice, a principal, a superintendent, and what else? You must have had an actress, a singer. Oh my God! Can I still call you by your? I can still call you Kate.
Of course.
Okay, good.
You should always call me Kate. Okay. Don't call me Bob or Bill.
Okay. So, you know, what about the other issues? Other issues that divide us, like the LGBTQ community here. You know, I sometimes shocked by some of the stories I hear from kids that there's still prejudice among the kids today in the schools.
I can't be more serious about this. That's ridiculous. That's unacceptable. And you have to, again, as I mentioned before, when it came to bullying, you actually have to work as hard as you can to create a spirit of and a school climate of acceptance. And aside from the fact that these kids deserve this legally, they deserve it morally and ethically, and staff members too. So I'm not really aware that it's a huge problem in Santa Barbara, but I'm telling you that it will be absolutely essential to me to get to the bottom of it if it is somewhere.
And which leads us into probably even a bigger issue, which is the Me Too issue. And what I mean by Me Too is that not just the harassment things that we're seeing in the newspaper every day, but, you know, we had a guest on who are very successful teachers now and professors at universities. Two women I remember particularly who teach science, and they said they were discouraged from doing science in high school because the female teacher sometimes said, you know, it's really not a woman's, you know, what is there still, you know, concern, or is there such a good sense that it's already being done that women are given every opportunity to do whatever they need to do?
No. Sexism is still rampant.
It is? I didn't know that.
I think it is. Yes, you did. Don't be sarcastic. Absolutely. It's out there and it's real. And so I think that's another thing that I bring to the table is just a very intense awareness of how much the world has changed since I was a kid and how much it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And I think, I have to say that even in listening to friends and family during the last election, some of the things people were saying about Hillary, they were grounded in sexism and nothing else.
Well, I don't want to get into that subject because we only have 90 seconds left, but you talk about sexism.
Well, invite me back.
Well, I hope to invite you back as a member of the school board.
Well, thank you.
I can't think of anyone better to be in a position to help our kids be all they can be, and to be a member of the school board would be a great thing for the community. I don't know why anyone would do it. sitting at a meeting every 3 hours.
I think it sounds great.
You think it sounds great? Well, I'm so glad there are people like you willing to put the time and the energy into.
When is the election?
When is the election?
Election is November 6th.
And this is a community-wide election, so it doesn't matter where you live.
Statewide and national elections take place on that day.
This is a very important election, so vote early, vote often.
I like your thinking. Okay. Well, thanks so much for your...
Well, thank you, Kate, for being here.
Wonderful interview.
Thank you. You've been listening to A Heart Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Shelly,